Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Breath of Frost by Kate Corvin. Narrated by Amy Melissa Bentley. Chapter 1. All the world was ice and snow. I clung to Jack despite myself and squeezed my eyes shut against the snow flurries, not wanting to be ripped away into the vast storm swirling around us. Jack was the only warm spot in the whirling wasteland of pure ice, keeping the worst of the driving snow at bay. I was still clinging to him when the flurries abruptly stopped and the ground solidified under our feet.
"We're here," he said, sounding amused. "But if you want to keep holding on..."
I released him immediately. Not in the slightest. Snowflakes clung to my hair, melting into cold droplets that slid down my neck. I brushed flecks of ice off my uniform, taking in my surroundings as I turned in place. Wherever here was, it was as white and pure as the snowstorm he'd pulled us through. Marble columns glittering with lacy webs of ice lined the wide balcony we'd appeared on, and the floor beneath our feet sparkled. I took a step closer to the edge of the balcony, looking down onto a winter forest far below us. Pine trees blanketed with a sugar powder dusting of snow stretched as far as the eye could see.
"The Court of Frost."
Jack stood next to me, his hands clasped behind his back. Somehow he wasn't shedding any snowflakes, nor were they dripping down his neck. Leave it to Jack to pull me through a snowstorm and come out looking perfect at the end of it, while I was a bedraggled mess.
Or at least part of it.
I automatically moved to rub my arms and realized I wasn't cold at all. Jack smiled when he saw the look on my face.
"The White Manor is enchanted. You won't be cold unless you go out there."
He nodded down at the dusted pine trees. "Lovely." Inwardly, I was seething, but I kept a tight grip on my temper. There was no way I was going to pitch a fit right after receiving my new badge. "So, care to explain what you meant by home? I've never seen this place before in my life." I glared at Jack, pulling my gaze from the pristine, glittering snowscape. I had to give it to him. It was beautiful, and there was something peaceful in the silence. Jack flicked an invisible snowflake off his shoulder. Not even his hair was mussed after our little journey.
"I could explain, but I won't.
Not yet.
Come with me."
I gritted my teeth so hard I thought they might crack. Jack and his presumptions. As I followed him through a pair of ice doors, three times as tall as a gentry male, I imagined shoving a ball of ice down the back of his neck. He was already so cold, it probably wouldn't bother him, but I could hope. "Okay, if you won't explain that, how about you tell me what you brought me here for?" I tried not to look up at stained glass windows frosted in shades of winter. Icy white, the dove gray of leafless skeleton trees, the blue of a cloudless sky, and the blackness of encroaching night. From the corner of my eye, the dead trees in one of the windows moved, rustling in an unheard wind. The White Manor was beautiful, and the last thing I wanted was for Jack to think I might be impressed.
"We're not ready for that, either."
He slowed his pace, walking beside me.
"I wanted to get to know you a little better first. Ensure we're a good fit. This is the Hall of Memories, by the way."
I grudgingly glanced up at one of the stained glass scenes above my head. It showed an idyllic little winter landscape, pine trees surrounding a log cabin. But there was nothing cozy about the scene. There were no warm lights in the cabin windows, no smoke rising from the chimney. The cabin looked abandoned, door cracked open, frost creeping in to cover the walls. "How nice for it," I muttered. So maybe I was being a little petulant. There were worse things to be after you'd had a debt called in and been yanked through a snowstorm with a guy who couldn't be nice to you without calling it a favor. The Hall of Memories came to an end with another set of iced-over doors. The ice cracked under Jack's touch, raining to the floor and melting into ether. This is where I live, and where we'll be meeting, if we can tolerate each other enough to have you fulfill the debt owed, he informed me. The rest of this is just for show now, since there's not enough of my kind to fill the entire manor, but the staff and I live in this portion. He pulled the door open. It occurred to me that the ice was actually a lock, and nobody but Jack would have been able to shatter it like that. Then what he said actually hit me. Not enough of his kind? I stepped through the door and glanced at him sidelong as he placed his hand on the door, growing a fresh layer of ice over it. It was a brief moment of unguardedness. His white hair fell forward over his shoulders, almost hiding his face, but for once he wasn't looking at everything with cool amusement. There was a faint line between his eyebrows, his lips turned down at the corners. It occurred to me that Jack was lonely. Was that window, that memory of an empty, abandoned cabin, his memory? I shoved the thought away as soon as it started circling in my head. Maybe, just maybe, if he wanted friends, he could be less of a jerk. I turned my attention to the living quarters of the White Manor instead. There was plush, midnight blue carpeting underfoot, and the high white walls were covered with tapestries that warmed the place up. Chandeliers made of shards of ice hung from the ceiling, casting a clear, pale glow over everything. He led me to the far end, where a desk made of pale oak sat next to a wide window overlooking the Court of Frost. Unlike Robin's messy office, with pictures tacked to the walls and mismatching, overstuffed velvet chairs scattered everywhere, Jack's desk was almost completely empty. There was a neat pile of manila folders resting on top, alongside a large glass paperweight with a coil of blonde hair swirling through its center. I frowned at the paperweight, then Jack gestured, and a breath of cold wind blew through the room. When the snowflakes scattered, there was a chair waiting for me, a comfortable wingback made of ivory toile. I sank into it as Jack circled the desk. Would you like anything to drink? He asked politely, sitting down across from me. Thistletop will get you anything you need. I was about to ask who in the trees Thistletop was when a paw lightly touched my knee. The little brownie had come in on silent feet. He was covered with short, silky white fur, mottled with darker gray patches, and his floppy ears had several silver rings lining them. A puff of wild white hair protruded from the crown of his head. I was about to refuse, but Thistletop had deep brown eyes above his snubbed snout, and he looked like his heart would break if I told him no. I'd like a hot cocoa, please? I wasn't cold at all in the White Manor, but since the view through the window showed nothing but a deep winter forest, it felt like the right choice. Thistletop patted my knee and trotted off, his claws clicking when he left the carpet. I looked at Jack evenly. So, you won't tell me why you brought me here, nor explain your little word games. What do you want to talk about then? He rested his elbows on the desk and steepled his fingers under his chin. The way Jack looked at me, it was like being stripped bare, letting ice seep through my bones and pull all my secrets out. I want to talk about you, I snorted. It'll be a very short conversation then. You've already dug up enough dirt on me. Robin should have had this talk with you already. You have dryadic magic, but you're either untrained or... He leaned back in his chair, still gazing at me. You don't understand it. I resisted the urge to bite down on my lower lip, to hold back what I wanted to say, which would be nothing but rudeness. I counted to 10 and finally managed to answer without biting his head off. I understand it perfectly well. I might be a dryad, but I've always been... The word I wanted to use was on the tip of my tongue. Defective, my mind whispered. Jack smiled thinly, waiting for me to say it. Different, I finished, smiling back with fake sweetness. And did you ever question why you might be different? He inquired. I gave him a cold, hard look. More than you could know. He'd brought me all the way to the White Manor to interrogate me over this? What a complete waste of time. And right when Robin had received orders to go after the Ghost Hand. He needed me there. And instead, I was here, receiving mugs of hot cocoa. Thistletop reappeared, his head barely taller than the arms of the wingback chair I sat in. He offered me a large mug that I took with both hands, the blue glazed ceramic heating my chilly fingers. The cocoa was dense, with piles of marshmallows melting into cream on top. I took a sip and discovered it was the best cocoa I'd ever had, thick without being overly sweet. It's delicious, I said truthfully, licking a bit of marshmallow off my lower lip. The best cocoa I've ever had. Thistletop quivered with delight and scuttled away, his snub tail wagging happily. I looked back to Jack and found his eyes resting on my mouth, where I'd licked my lips. A faint flush heated my cheeks as they rose back up to meet my gaze. The point is, Briolin, you have to first know yourself if you want to be of use to anyone else. He wasn't smiling now. You know nothing about yourself at all. And there it was, the rudeness I'd come to expect from him. I took another sip and looked up at the tapestry behind him, needing a moment to collect myself from the icy laser vision of his gaze. I hated how he made me feel when he questioned me, like I was about to take a step and fall into an abyss instead of landing on solid ground. I almost choked on my cocoa when I realized what the tapestry showed. I would know the golden apples and their depictions anywhere. The tapestry showed the golden grove of Emain Ablaish and my mother's first tree. The apples themselves were picked out with golden thread that caught the light, nestled among skeins of emerald green. But there were two knights in the tapestry, one woven in ivory, the other in shades of charcoal. Each held one of the apples in their outstretched hands. Is something wrong? Jack asked, looking a shade too innocent. I jerked my eyes away from the tapestry. The golden apples were common mythology. Many fae aspired to be worthy of picking one. Seeing a tapestry depicting them wasn't out of the ordinary at all. Not at all. So, how exactly do you propose I get to know myself better, Jack who knows best? As usual, I'd forgotten my place and let my mouth run away with me. I tried not to cringe, expecting gentry wrath for my back talk. Not even the fresh, new, permanent residency ID in my pocket would save me from that. Instead, he smiled, and it was completely genuine, his eyes crinkling at the corners. I thought you'd never ask, Briolin the Bullheaded. Chapter 2. Thistletop returned to take my empty mug, and Jack rose from his desk. This way. The office is no place to practice. I got up, and the wingback chair remained where it was. I suspected he would keep it there until he no longer had a need for me to visit. We didn't pass back through the Hall of Memories. Instead, he led me further into the living quarters of the White Manor, past wide windows that looked over the Icelands, and we finally came to another set of iced doors. He melted the ice and pushed the door open, and I suppressed a gasp when I followed him in. It was an indoor garden, a wonderland of plants and flowers beneath a clear window that allowed the sun to touch their leaves. Every single flower was pure white, their leaves glazed with frost, sparkling as I walked onto a bed of powdery snow. It's beautiful. The plants didn't speak to me as strongly as trees, but I still felt their happiness and comfort surrounding me like a warm glow. They're so happy here. Jack looked around. It's useful. I use them in poisons and antidotes. I reached out and touched a pale morning glory, with lavender streaks coloring the flower's throat. Frost melted on my fingertips, exposing the velvet petal beneath the icy shell. It's okay to appreciate something for its beauty, Jack. Not everything is about utility. I turned and found him looking at me, that wintry gaze intense. For a moment, my mouth went dry, and my heart started pounding. Seriously? What was wrong with me? It was Jack the Jerk looking at me, not Robin. I breathed a sigh of relief when he looked away. He shut the door and stepped through the snow. Interestingly, he walked on top of the drifts, leaving no footprints behind. We'll practice over here. I followed, slushing through the snow and destroying its perfection. Jack led me to the back of the garden, where the snow had been cleared away in a perfect circle, leaving me a ring of rich, black earth to work with. He held out a large hand. Grow me a tree. My stomach was suddenly churning, the cocoa becoming a too-sweet syrup that made me feel sick. All I could think of was my tree on Sobek Street, the bloodied crimson blossoms catching the sun like they were aflame, and the thick thorns that tore through bodies like tissue paper. Jack, I croaked his name. I don't think this is a good idea. He sat cross-legged on the snow, near the circle of dirt. Sure it is. No, really. I planted my hands on my hips, glaring down at him. I know myself, and what I know really, really well about myself is that you don't want to be in an enclosed space with me when I grow something. Jack shrugged, his full lips twisted in a smug smile. It's a risk I'm willing to take. I stared at him, but he didn't budge. It's your funeral, I muttered, sinking down on my knees in the snow beside the circle. Which, by the way, I will not be attending. Know yourself, Briolin, he said. Grow a tree. Don't think about it. Don't put anything into it. Just do it. I laid my hands flat on top of my thighs and exhaled, closing my eyes. I wouldn't put any of myself into this tree, but I needed to get a grip on my irritation with him or I'd grow something twisted and stunted. Possibly even something with thorny teeth. When I opened my eyes, ready to lean forward, I found Jack watching me again. His winter eyes, white, gray, blue splinters of color, were avid with interest. By the branches, will you stop staring? I asked, my irritation rising again. How am I supposed to concentrate with you doing that? You're not supposed to be concentrating at all. You're supposed to just do it. My fingers dug into my thighs. I've grown trees before, Jack. This is nothing new. What are you trying to prove here? He plucked a snowdrop and began twirling it between his fingers. He'd tucked his white hair behind his ears, exposing their pointed tips. It's just a hunch I have. For the love of winter, grow a tree already. I scowled at him, then leaned forward and dug my hands into the earth, closing my eyes again. Fine. You want a tree? Here's a tree. The seed of magic pulsed through my hands, sinking deep into the rich soil. I coaxed it to grow, giving it life and energy. The roots exploded out and sank, growing themselves a strong network to anchor the trunk that poked through the soil. I barely breathed as I brought the tree to life, letting it rise until its canopy nearly touched the glass ceiling overhead. Then I sank back on my haunches, drawing my dirt-caked fingertips out of the earth, and opened my eyes to see what monstrosity I'd created this time. I half expected Jack to be swallowed by thorns. Jack smiled at me from the other side of the slender trunk. Beautiful. The trunk was pale gray, almost silvery in places, and the dark, thin-bladed leaves overhead hung like the curtains of a weeping willow. Pale pink blossoms opened and were immediately laced with frost. I frowned at the beautiful, peaceful tree. It was only the second one I'd managed to create that wasn't ravening for all the life around it. And, like its sister tree, it had been grown in Onwin. "It's very interesting, isn't it?" Jack murmured. "Compare this tree to the one in Avillion. Quite a difference." I brushed dirt off my fingers, saying nothing. "Why might they be peaceful here and so savage there?" he continued. I picked up a handful of snow to scrub my hands with. "Jack, have you ever grown a tree like this in Avillion?" He looked directly at me, daring me to look away. I didn't, meeting that frosty gaze with my own. He might look like an angel trapped in ice, but by the trees, he was so frustrating I wanted to scream. "No, every tree I've grown in the upper world has been a nightmare." Jack rose to his feet and walked around the tree, holding out a hand to me. Without thinking, I took it, and he pulled me to my feet. His warm, rough hand enveloped mine completely. As always, the warmth of Jack's skin belied his frost. "It's only a taste of what's to come. I'll return you to Robin now. Clearly you need time to see what's right in front of you." I bit down on the inside of my cheek. "I see it perfectly well. It's a perfectly nice tree that isn't trying to kill anything in its path. What a surprise." It was, in fact, a surprise. I'd been so sure my tree on Briolin's Hill had only grown that way because I'd put so much of my hopes and dreams into it. But if I could replicate that anywhere in Onwin, maybe I wouldn't end up being a good-for-nothing dryad after all, which seemed like a hope too good to be true. I'd had enough of hopes like that, that only blew up in my face when I wished too hard. Jack ignored my petulance. "I think, if we can get along without killing each other, that you will fit quite well with what I need you for." Now that's a tall order. I realized he was still holding my hand and tried to pull away, but Jack gripped me tightly. Too late, I realized that snowflakes were drifting through the room. I barely had time to grab onto him before the wind howled and everything went white. We landed in the warm, buttery sunlight of midday in Avillion. Every tree in my immediate vicinity clamored at my presence. I recognized the smug blackthorn in my mind before I even saw where I was, heard the singing of the fairy fruit bushes. Robin's backyard. "I'll fetch you tomorrow on a breath of frost," Jack promised. "Know yourself, and don't run from it." I released him from my desperate grip, taking a step back and trying to compose myself. I really needed to stop clinging to Jack like a lovesick spider monkey every time he ripped me between the worlds. "Tomorrow," I promised, ignoring the heat fizzing along my cheekbones. But when I looked up at him, his easy smiles were gone, eyes like ice again. I opened my mouth to say something, unsure of what would come out. It wasn't like I enjoyed his company, not even a little bit. But he looked so alone before he vanished in another flurry. The snow left behind melted before it touched the sun-warmed grass. I imagined him alone in that white, cold manor, with nothing but endlessly falling snow to break the silence. No friends, no warmth, no laughter. Something cold touched my ear. I reached up and found that the snowdrop he'd picked was tucked behind my ear. The frost on its delicate white petals was already gone. I scowled at it, thought about tossing it out into the grass, then tucked it behind my ear again. Just because it was pretty, that was all. Have fun. I whirled around. Robin Goodfellow leaned against the open doorframe, Zissa sitting on his shoulder and squealing silently into her hands. Her crush on Jack was unrivaled. But with Robin watching like that, predatory and hawk-like, no wonder Jack had gone so cold before he vanished. Fun is a strong word. I shook my head and stepped onto the porch. It was informative, possibly. As long as he brings you back in one piece. Robin's brilliant blue eyes took me in from head to toe. As always, the sight of his broad shoulders and raven black hair made my heart skip a few beats. He didn't hurt me. I think he wanted to take my measure before he fully commits to calling in his favor. I followed Robin into the house, closing the door behind me. Oddly, despite only having worked for him for a month out of the 6 I'd originally owed, his house was beginning to feel like a home away from home. There was a pot of fresh coffee in the kitchen, and Cinder, the kitchen fire salamander, breathed a little blue flame on the kettle's bottom before I poured myself a cup and added cream. I turned around and found Robin right behind me, nearly sloshing my coffee all over myself. He reached up and touched the snowdrop tucked behind my ear with a faint frown. I can always repay this debt in your place, Miss Appletree. Blessed branches. It was hard to breathe when he was this close. I clutched my coffee mug tighter, like it was a shield between us. The trees only knew how deep my crush on him ran. I kept trying to surreptitiously get a whiff of his delicious cologne without wiggling my nose like a rabbit. No, I repay my debts, boss, no one else. Robin smiled a little and dropped his hand. Fair. Although I'd rather not share you with Jack, to tell the truth. I was loath to admit it, even to myself, but that was a small part of the reason I would never let him repay my debt to Jack. Their rivalry was too deeply entrenched for them to get along, and now that I'd seen the White Manor, heard the silence for myself. Jack made me bristle, but I hated the idea of that silence being tainted with constant fighting. Maybe, if I was nicer to him next time, he would be less annoying. I'm just a loaner agent. My first loyalty is here. I managed to sidle away from Robin and park myself at the kitchen table, where Zissa was sitting in her doll chair and spooning honey in her mouth. Several books had been stacked haphazardly in a pile. What are these?
Your next lessons.
Robin pulled out a chair and sat down in front of a half-drunk mug of coffee on the table.
You need to study up on basic Nereid tongues, in case we need to use that again, and we'll begin physical training later this week.
I groaned into my coffee. Robin grinned at me evilly.
3 laps around Thornwood, to start with. Your feet were torn up badly in the Undercity, which is why we're waiting, but you need to build your stamina.
I biked around Avillion for a living before I met you, boss. I protested in outrage. My thigh and calf muscles were pure steel. Who was he kidding?
Biking and running are 2 completely different activities.
Robin pulled a book from the stack and slid it to me.
Atlantean Nereid. We'll start there.
I flipped the cover open, just as a brilliant mode of light sparkled to life above the table. Zissa and Robin both looked up,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?